Hi, everyone, and welcome to Beverage Chronicles, the weekly show where every sip tells a story. I'm your host, Gary Monteroso, and together we will explore the world of drinks in all its forms, from craft beer to fine wine, from cocktails to creative non-alcoholic pours, even coffee and tea. Each week we'll meet the people behind the beverages, uncover the history in your glass, and share the trends shaping what we drink next. So pour yourself something special, settle in, and let's begin another chapter of Beverage Chronicles. For those who have savored a quality tequila shot alongside a refreshing ice-cold lager, it's evident that hops and agave make for a delightful combination. Therefore, it's no surprise that beer aged in tequila barrels can result in a refined brew with intricate flavors. Now, the method in itself is simple, yet the outcomes can be quite remarkable. Freshly brewed beer is stored in casks that previously contained tequila. And as it ages, the beer absorbs various flavors from the wood, evolving into something unique. Once you start putting beer in casks, changes take place. You're mixing different elements, and you're creating something that's completely different. In contrast to aging beer in bourbon barrels, utilizing tequila casks can be a more nuanced process. The maturation period in tequila casks can be longer compared to other spirits. You may not really notice the influence of the tequila casks on the beer for up to a year, whereas those aged in bourbon barrels can develop a whiskey beer character in roughly 6 months. And I found a couple of tequila-infused beers that I really enjoyed. I'm going to share them with you. One is by a California-based brewery called Firestone Walker, and this beer is called Tequila Sunrise. It's actually a barley wine. That's a strong beer, a strong ale, well-suited to tequila barrel aging. It's blonde in color. It's Firestone Walker's lightest in color, and it's aged in tequila barrels. It's become a staple of the brewery's barrel aging program. Now, they carefully blend the tequila barrel-aged barley wine with another batch aged in barrels that contain cherry and orange bitters. The cellar at Firestone Walker is cave temperature, which is about 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and this allows the brewery, or the brewer, I should say, to age the beer a little longer without picking up notes that emerge in beer that's been barrel-aged for too long. The result is an excellent take on a barley wine reminiscent of the classic tequila cocktail. And the second one that I enjoyed also is by Goose Island in the Midwest. It's called La Palomita. Now, as you probably know, Goose Island was a pioneer in the barrel aging movement. In the early 1990s, it became one of the earliest breweries to experiment with the process. They matured an imperial stout in a bourbon barrel during its days as a small brew pub. So La Palomita is a saison, but it kind of resembles grapefruit soda. And it kind of looks like a fruit soda or a rattler. And what is developed is a rich, wheated quality and zesty grapefruit flavors up front, followed by toasty notes imparted from the agave and wood. So again, if you find those beers, you may want to check them out if you like tequila. It's La Palomita by Goose Island and Tequila Sunrise by Firestone Walker. Now, my co-host Michelle Lamb is going to come along. She has an interview with the founders of a company called The Lucky Ox, started in New York City. Now, this company was co-founded by Fan Hay, I hope I'm pronouncing the name correctly, and Kyle Nguyen. And these were two former Nike employees who made the pivot from sportswear to sparkling drinks. And it's an interesting story. It's a story of cultural pride and entrepreneurial grit. And before Michelle steps in, I did want to ask the guys about how they decided where they were going to be placing their beverages. It's not the easiest thing. Do you market toward, you know, some of the higher-end restaurants, family restaurants, sports bars? So I posed that question to them. Here's what they said.
You know, at first we thought that we were only going to target like those higher-end Asian restaurants and stores, but we soon saw that Italian restaurants, French restaurants, and American sports bars even were, you know, taking on our product. And it was just really cool to see just a hole-in-the-wall recipe just in all these different settings. And they used our drink in a really, really creative ways, from cocktail mixers to mocktails to mixers for espresso tonics and matcha lemonades. And that ultimately inspired our second SKU, the matcha lemonade. And then we also launched a pandan coconut. You know, with pandan, it's a really unique Asian flavor that we grew up with that's used in a lot of desserts, and you just don't find it in grocery store shelves anywhere. So we launched the matcha and the pandan, and now we're in over 500 accounts all along the East Coast and nationwide too. We're starting to make a bigger push in Middle America with our online wholesale. So it's been a journey, you know, and we started with just doing the door-to-door and hand-delivering cases. So now we have some distributors helping us, so we don't have to hand-deliver all those cases on the subway anymore. But just, you know, really cool seeing this business just grow in only really just 9 months of business.
That's amazing, guys. So can you specifically highlight some of the products that you want our listeners to try? And also, I think the listeners always want to know, if I have never discover or even had these type of flavors, what to expect when you pick a specific beverage item from your product and the shelves too?
Yeah, definitely. You know, there's something really unique about our drinks, because it's not very often that you get to try something new, of, you know, for something that you already know. So two of our drinks are lemonades, right? One's a Vietnamese salted lemonade. It's tangy, salty, sweet. And a lot of drinks out there are just like sweet fruit drinks. Our drink has a more full-bodied flavor profile that lends itself well to being a cocktail mixer. It kills the burn of a lot of liquors. It's a good meal pairing as well. The salt complements like savory and spicy dishes, and it's also used good as a mixer, you know, in cafes with espresso and matcha. With our matcha lemonade, you know, most matcha drinks that people have had are mostly like lattes. So this is like a bright, refreshing, more of like a midday matcha that's not just something you have in lieu of a coffee. And we're using ceremonial grade matcha, the highest quality stuff that you're going to find in a ready-to-drink matcha product. Pandan coconut, it's creamy while still being light and refreshing at the same time. So we're blending pandan, the vanilla of Southeast Asia, with fresh coconut water for just honestly a really light, refreshing tropical drink. And all of our drinks have a really important cultural basis to them, and they're all something that you can find in a restaurant. We didn't make anything probiotic, adaptogenic, functional. We use real sugar, less sugar than a boiling Coke or anything. You know, we got no seed oils. We use glass bottles to avoid all the microplastics. So, you know, you're tasting a new culture and a new flavor of something that you're already familiar with.
That is amazing, guys. Congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
Is there any sort of like food pairing that you guys recommend when having the beverages, or is it kind of, you can drink it wherever with different cultures? Like, is there any specific cuisine that you guys recommend that best pair with each of the beverage that you guys have?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, definitely Asian cuisine, right? Given that these are Asian drinks. However, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we've seen our drinks in American sports bars like Blue Haven and Murray Hill, you know, the frattiest neighborhood in the entire city, had our drink as a mixer for vodka highballs or vodka lemonades during March Madness. And, you know, Travelers, Poets and Friends, for example, has us to pair along with their pizzas and pastas. The versatility is honestly just completely endless with our drinks.
Yeah, just to add on a little bit there, totally agree with Fane. I mean, it's something so incredible where it's like, hey, we have this Vietnamese lemonade, but it has a salty kick, right? So it really brings out like coffee notes, and you see it in espresso tonics. It's really good for whiskey highballs because, again, a lot of the nuances of the whiskey come out. You think about like a salty, fresh lemony cocktail. It's like a margarita type vibe. So, we're really good with tequila. One of my personal favorites, honestly, oxtail of any kind, whether it's just like Jamaican oxtail, you got like Dominican oxtail, just Vietnamese style oxtail, just really nice stewed, just really nice stewed dishes, especially kind of more like heavily seasoned, what you think of like hole in the wall mom and pop shop. Those flavors, very tropical, incredible vibe with, like our pandan coconut or our lemonades.
That is fantastic. And do you guys have any upcoming events or maybe the next chapter where like the listeners can follow your journey?
Yeah, we're just entering into our first retail chains, which is really cool between the ShopRite, Gourmet Garages, Fairways, Earth Fairs in the Southeast, Citarella, Uncle Giuseppe's, DiCecco's. So it's just a matter of getting our product out there and having people in new areas across the country try our products. And as far as events are concerned, we do have a couple coming up. There's one in a Yelp one out in Queens, as well as a few other ones, Chinatown Social on September 6th. We are also working on some new flavors. More to come on that soon.
And where can our listeners follow your journey and how can they buy your products too?
Yeah, you can follow us on the Lucky Ox Co. That's our Instagram, as well as our TikTok. We're also releasing a business growth course to, just like help people throughout the entrepreneurial journey and just show how we scaled. And that's something that we're going to be doing on probably like a monthly basis, holding those like leadership sessions as well.
Yeah, no, honestly, something really important to say is very much in the vein of Startup CPG. We're really good friends with the people there. Shout out Daniel, shout out Kaylin, shout out the entire team. Honestly, like I gotta say, like there's a lot of other CPG entrepreneurs who came to New York, sacrificed everything, left their full-time jobs to focus on this business, right? It's really hard to get just motion out there. So, we just really love to get a chance to just share just kind of some of the things from our experiences about like what were some of the pitches that helped and like why door to door was just so crucial and things of that sort,
Absolutely. Thank you so much, guys, for being on the Beverage Chronicles show. Everyone, please follow their journey and try their products and let us know your feedback. Thank you, guys.
Let's build, fam. It wasn't just luck.
And now here's wine expert John Mahoney.
Do you need pink grapes to make a rosé wine? Well, this is John Mahoney with a wine tip for Beverage Chronicles from Wine Radio answering, no, you don't need pink grapes. All the best pink wines are called rosé wines, and they come from red grapes. The wine's color is derived from the grape's skins. Both red and white grapes have white insides, with very few exceptions. The longer the grape juice lies soaking on the skins, the darker the red wine will become. Rosés soak for just a few hours. Red wine soak for a number of days, depending upon the type of wine. Rosés can also be made cheaply by adding a little splash of red wine to an already made white wine. It's a simpler way to do it. It provides less floral notes and actually less flavors. But soaking the wine and absorbing the color from the skin pigmentations is the proper way to make rosé. Well, this is John Mahoney explaining that I love rosé wines any time of the year. They're perfect for any summer luncheon and always ideal for a first course if you're pairing with an evening meal. The French Provence wines, made mostly from the Grenache grapes, are usually the lightest pink in color, but they have the most fragrance and a refreshing acidity that goes with almost anything you'll eat. But you can make a rosé from any red grape. In vino veritas.
Thanks to our wine critic, John Mahoney, my co-host, Michelle Lamb, and our special guests. This is Gary Monteroso. Be sure to check out our website at beveragechronicles.com for more information. And we will see you next week.